This is a fly. This is folly.
With style. Strange little man.
It's a special episode of Falling with Style. I'm Doug.
And I'm Derek.
And this was, I guess kind of still is, an ongoing Pixar movie marathon podcast. Each episode is typically dedicated to exactly one movie in the Pixar Animation Studios canon. But today we're doing something different because we've covered all the feature films that exist.
We have.
We've gotten through them all, from Toy Story 1 to Lightyear. We've covered every Pixar feature film that has been released. So what we are doing for this episode is touching down and talking about everything we've covered so far. And I think because that is 26 movies, a lot of what we're going to be using to guide our discussion is an updating of our rankings from our last special episode, our last touchdown episode. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know how you feel about ranking, but I always get very anxious.
Yeah. I mean, I do before. I think it helped. I listened back to our retrospective from the first year before, which, you know, and it did kind of remind me, like, I really had no idea what I was doing with the ranking in the first place.
Yeah, I didn't do mine movies. The same way.
Yeah, I still use that as a baseline and kind of kept it. I didn't really change much from that because I knew I was going to be adding so many of the later movies kind of in between and around and on top of the other ones that kind of just naturally bumped down a lot of movies that were high on the list before, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I mean, you know, it's like, I feel like the top few matter. Like, I felt like with me, I'm like, you got your top tier ones that are like super important to me, like the first like 7 or 8, and then like the middle like 15 or whatever are just like maybe not fully interchangeable, but kind of interchangeable, because it's usually going to be a thing where it's sort of like, it was all right, but didn't really speak to me as much as like other ones did, you know? And then you have your bottom tier ones that I actively like have problems with and don't see myself ever watching. So I tried to approach it like that and tried to make it as little of a deal as possible, but and just kind of have fun with it, because there are some really, I think, on my list, some I think weird pulls that people will be surprised about, that surprised me, but then I was just like, I don't know, it just feels right to put it in this order, and I think it'll be obvious which ones those are. So
yeah, I don't know what of mine will necessarily be a huge surprise, especially given the last sort of ranking we did, but I also sort of tried to think of it in tiers. It was kind of the only way I could organize it, and I kind of had three things that I was looking for, and anything in that sort of highest up, and they're kind of equal tiers almost. Anything in that sort of highest tier hit on all of the things that I was thinking about. Anything in the middle either was weaker in one category, or sort of generally so. And then that bottom tier is things that are either fundamentally flawed or just underwhelming overall.
Yeah. I thought it was funny too, listening to that episode, because I totally forgotten that we crowdsourced it a little bit to see what other people's rankings were. And it's kind of funny because it's like, I'm glad that there wasn't even an idea to do that again. I don't know if you had considered doing that again. I hadn't even thought about it.
I thought about it, but 26 movies is so many movies. And I don't think at that point everybody's seen all of them.
No, that's what I was just going to say. I feel like there's a chunk of them at that point that a lot of people wouldn't have seen, which means the data wouldn't really be that. Like, the data was never going to be that statistically accurate anyway. And at that point, it's just sort of like, well, why are we even doing this if like people are going to naturally put Lightyear as the number 26 spot because they haven't seen it and were annoyed by the marketing or something, you know what I mean? Like, what's the point in doing that? And also, there was no way we would get that many responses for people to rank 26 movies. People would start it and then get bored and not finish it. Like,
absolutely,
it's a miracle that we're even doing it.
Yeah, I know, it was a really difficult task. I don't know how people do this just like all the time. Like this is like a thing people do for fun, is just like rank stuff constantly. And I, you know, right before we started recording, I was like, oh no, I just looked at two and I feel like I should swap them. Like, well, and that's all I'm ever going to do. I almost am glad that I did it a different way than last time, because I think if I keep sort of tweaking the criteria, then I can never feel like I've locked into something.
Yeah. Well, it's hard with Pixar, especially. I think it's easy to do rankings of stuff. Not easy, but it's easier to do rankings of stuff when you have like wide arrays of quality, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're ranking like episodes of Star Trek, even though there's tons of them, there are also like as many bad episodes as there are good ones in any given Star Trek show.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And with Pixar, the thing that I think we found, you posited from the beginning that Pixar's never made a bad movie, and I was like, we'll see. And then coming into the end of the 26th movie run, it's like, I mean, you're not wrong. Like they have made not particularly great movies, and they've made mediocre movies, and they've made movies that I don't personally like at all. But like even the worst movies, which are probably at the bottom of both of our favorites rankings, mm-hmm. still have something commendable about them that make them better than bad movies from other studios. And I think it's more challenging when it's sort of like, you know, you're going to have the stuff that speaks to you, but anything that's sort of in the middle, there's like a whole chunk of these where it's just like, I don't know, they're all kind of equally fine at worst. So how do you rank that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really just a matter of like what, because to be clear to listeners, we were approaching it as like favorites, not best. I think we had that conversation
yep.
on the year one retrospective, because like it's impossible and less fun, I think, to do best of lists because they're probably all going to be really similar. Everybody's going to put fucking like Wall-E at the top of their list or whatever. Right. You know?
And with something like Pixar, for the exact same reason you're talking about what makes it difficult, like if you're doing objectively best, you're going to have a few movies that fall at the bottom and everything else is going to be so nitpicky because they are objectively good at what they do.
Yeah. And it just becomes like, kind of annoying. Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, okay. So are you rating best? Like does something that like technically is very good and has like a really great story and does a lot of thematic stuff, but has like problematic elements that are like bad for society. Is mm-hmm. that going to let it be higher or lower? You know, like Soul on a best of list. I have no freaking idea where you would put that because there's so much technically about that movie that is so good and so much about its structure as a film that is amazing, but then there's so much other stuff about like it's in the context of where it is historically in culture that has a problem. And it's sort of like, well, where do you land with that on a best of? I think you can more easily determine that as a favorites list, even if it's still complicated, where it's just sort of like, yeah, this spoke to me in a particular way, even if I have problems with it and it's enough to overlook it, or vice versa, the problems with it like affected me so much that I could never feel good about putting it higher, you know? Like, yeah, it's just a harder conversation to have with best of. And with favorites, it's like, what hit you struck a chord with you personally? What is a thing you can throw on and rewatch at any given time? You know, I thought about like, there are movies that I specifically remember the moment that I was watching it, like where I was sitting, the time of day it was, where I saw it at, and the impact I had there because it was so impactful when I was watching it. And that's automatically going to make it higher on my list than a movie that, you know, I just threw on a Disney Plus one night and don't even remember when, and probably only did it for the podcast or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are certain ones that just, there's always going to be a gut reaction to bump them higher, have them be at the top or whatever. And I think that's exactly what a favorites list is. I considered what we talked about in our 1 year, which is that rewatch value, that enjoyable factor. Like, what's a movie I can just put on and I know I'm going to enjoy myself and I'm going to feel those feelings again. Like, it's just good enough for me to re-experience it that way. Mm-hmm. I did try to think more so for the things that were in the middle or towards the bottom for me, because I didn't want to just put them all in one group. I did want to try to put each one in its own specific spot. I did try to factor in, okay, if I'm not sure how to place these, which one do I think is maybe objectively a better piece of art, right? Whether that's mm-hmm. because of its story or because of what it accomplishes or whatever. But the primary thing that I did this time that I think you probably talked about more in our 1 year than I did, because I specifically was like, rewatch. Which one am I going to throw on most likely in a rewatch? Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot lately about something, and I don't know if it's because of what this person said or if it just was something I was already thinking about, but Jason Headley, who is one of the writers of Lightyear and I believe Onward, had this quote when I was researching for Lightyear. And he said, I have this working theory on why we're drawn to stories. It's primarily because we're dumb and we can't remember things, so we need to have the same lessons taught to us over and over again so that we remember to be decent and we remember that we're part of a community. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with why he got to that point, because I think it's sort of cynical. Mm-hmm. But I have been thinking a lot about, like, what media over the course of my life, what works of art over the course of my life have really shaped my perspective, or do I want to shape my perspective as a person moving forward, right?
That's great. Yeah.
So I really thought about that this time around. So all the stuff that kind of is in my top tier is there because I have been thinking about them a lot in that context. Which pieces of these or which of these movies do I know shaped my perspective? Which of them do I want to shape my perspective? And what, I'm surely some of them are a blend, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I get that.
And some of them just don't. And you'll see those at the bottom of my list.
Yeah. And I'm literally switching to you right now because I realize, like, oh shit. I'm not changing it because I changed my mind. I think it's what I always wanted to do with it. But then when you were talking, I was like, wait, yeah, no, I forgot this movie really affected me emotionally more than that movie. And I did not mean to have those in this swapped order. Yeah. I want that one above it. But mm-hmm. The sort of, That is a great way to put it. Like, it's like sort of shaping you, whether it's like shaping you as a person or just how you view things or how you approach anything. Yeah. Yes. I think that's a great thought to have. I think I was kind of considering those things too.
And for me, I think the reason this feels significant to me lately is like, is really that other side of like how I want to be, like the type of things that not just that I can put on as a rewatch because I will enjoy them, but that maybe I need to put on as a rewatch as like a reminder or a grounding or a centering, which I think is what Jason Headley was talking about. That sort of like, we're drawn to these stories because we need to be reminded, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So
I love that.
I tried to take it a little bit, not necessarily more seriously, but I tried to tweak my criteria this time around, since mm-hmm. we've done them all now, you know?
Yeah. Now, here's my question to you.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, it's like when we did it the first time, you know, we just did 1 through 12. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you want to do like a bottom to top this time? Like,
Well, at the very least, I think we should start with the bottom because I have a feeling it's the same thing for both of us.
Probably.
And
yeah.
It would be bizarre to end on that.
Yeah. That's why I would feel kind of weird because
I think we can start there. Whether we go strictly from bottom to top or not, I'm not, it's hard because, geez, this is so hard.
Well, here's what I have. Yeah. I have my bottom tier that are 4 movies and I have my top tier that are the top 10, so it's not even really top tier. It's just literally just top 10 goes easier. And then I have mid tier, which is 11 through 22.
Perfect.
For me.
Okay. Maybe we start with our bottom tier. I have 7 movies that fall into that third tier, which I categorize as either they were fundamentally flawed in one of the categories I was sort of considering, or they were underwhelming in all 3 of the categories I was considering.
We can do the bottom. I don't stick to the bottom tier, mid tier, the upper tier, whatever thing. So we can just do whatever, however you have it. We can give each other the bottom 7 movies. I think that would be fine.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think anybody who's listened to our podcast, not even just the episodes for each one, but who've heard all of our episodes will have heard us reference this several times, but like, I'm guessing you and I have the same movie at the bottom of our lists. Mine is The Good Dinosaur.
Yep.
Yes.
The same here. Yep.
And my sort of, not to, you know, relitigate every single movie here, but I think the way I was thinking about it, it's not an especially enjoyable rewatch. It does not instill any sort of core perspective in me. I don't need it to guide me moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think objectively it has lots and lots of problems with it that I think we gave plenty of credit to the process. Like it's a production nightmare. I mean, production marred the movie. And it is a worse piece of art for it. And I think the worst piece of art as far as a feature film goes that they've put out.
Yeah. And there's plenty of cool ideas in there that could have been executed well, but they were executed terribly or not at all. And, you know, in a lot of ways it makes it even worse. It's like, oh, this obviously wasn't just like a cash in, you kind of tried and still failed. And that kind of makes it worse than if it was just something that was obviously never meant to be that good in the first place, you know? So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just listen to that episode. We have plenty of groans and sighs about that.
It's the only Pixar movie that the more I think about it, or each time I think about it, I get re-frustrated, or I think of something else to be frustrated by. There is no other Pixar movie that falls into that very specific category for me.
I think that's the one that really the only one that you could very easily make a case that it's just straight up bad. And I don't know that I disagree with you. I'm on a very thin line of if I would call that movie bad. And it's really, I struggle with it, but I think that, you know, I do think that it's just not good. And, but it's not good. Not that it's bad, but if you say it's bad, I'm not going to like fight you on it. Cause it's not
probably
good.
I think it's probably the one movie out of 26 that I wouldn't really spend any energy fighting with somebody over. If they said that's a bad movie, Pixar did make a bad movie, you know? Yeah, right. Cause the next movie on my list, which I'm also assuming is the same as yours, is a movie I do kind of fight to say, no, it's a good movie. I just get that it's not your favorite.
Cars 2.
Yes. And that's what it is for me. I don't think it's a bad movie, but I understand why anyone who is an adult doing rankings is going to put it at the bottom.
Yeah. I can tell you right now for this bottom. Yeah. It's basically in spots 23, 24, and 25. It's just Cars, Cars 3, Cars 2. Basically.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I still, you know, Cars and Cars 3 are fine. But I just really have no love for the Cars movies and I have no interest in ever revisiting them. So
yeah,
that's my bottom. Cars, Cars 3, Cars 2, Good Dinosaur currently. That's okay. Where it all stands.
And that doesn't really surprise me. I do have Cars and Cars 3 higher up than some other things.
Mm-hmm.
But Cars 3 is in my category of things that I think are either underwhelming all around or sort of fundamentally flawed. Yeah. Cars is actually in my middle tier where I think it's just generally weaker than what I would consider like the best Pixar stuff.
Yeah.
But it is lowest in that grouping. The other stuff I put in my sort of bottom category are there because I think in the grand scope of Pixar movies, and I wouldn't be surprised if these were some of your next up, you know, the list, are things that I just think are underwhelming in each thing I was looking at, right? Like I find them generally enjoyable, but they're never going to be the first thing I put on. I don't think that they have a lack of messaging or a lack of morals, but I don't think they stand out as Pixar's best sort of explorations of any themes. And I think they're fine pieces of art. And the next two I have are Finding Dory and Monsters University, which I kind of always think of together. Like they are just sequels that I don't know needed to happen. They're not bad movies. They just didn't, I don't think they really added deeply to either property. I know that they technically added lore and they technically added story and they added characters. I think they're the kinds of movies where if they never happened, this is probably harsh because I do enjoy them, but if they never happened, I don't feel like I would have been missing anything from Finding Nemo or Monsters, Inc.
Yep. I have Finding Dory and Monsters University in that order right above the Cars movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. They're fine. They're fine. I don't really remember a lot of them. I feel like I only remember anything from them because we literally podcasted about them, but I don't foresee myself ever rewatching them ever again. So
I feel they're the kind of movies I would only rewatch because I just watched Finding Nemo and then I'm like, oh, well, throw on Finding Dory. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
And Finding Dory, I really like things about it. Some of the characters they added, like Hank, I adore.
Yeah.
But you know,
I wish Hank was in his own movie and not in a Finding Nemo sequel focused on Dory.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious. So this puts me with three more in here. The next one just going immediately up. And for anybody who's keeping track, I put Monsters University below Finding Dory. Probably
so
because I feel like there's more in Finding Dory for me to enjoy than Monsters University.
Big same. Yep.
The next one up on my list is another one that I consider sort of hindered by production, sort of and not just the final product hindered by production, but knowing some of the stuff around production, it just makes me have a hard time enjoying it, even though I do think there's a lot of really valuable stuff in there. For me, the next one was Brave.
Me too. Yeah. Yep. Brave was right above Finding Dory for me.
Well, this is
the same thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think very similarly to The Good Dinosaur, but for certainly different reasons. I think it would have been a better movie if they hadn't changed a bunch of stuff around, if they had allowed somebody to carry out their vision. I think they probably have reverse journeys. I think Brave, we obviously don't know everything, but my, where I land is that let Brenda Chapman make the movie Brenda Chapman set out to make. And I think it probably would have had a stronger thesis to it and it would have had a stronger impact. I think Good Dinosaur, other way around. I think if you had let somebody fully take it over and just abandon, you know, completely refresh it instead of holding on to a lot of elements from its production journey. So I think that's the difference between the two. I do think Brave is has a lot more value in there than Good Dinosaur does for me, which is why it ended up higher.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Here's where the conversation, I think, starts, because since you had Cars 1 and Cars 3 at the bottom of your list, I did have Cars 3 higher than Brave. Like, sure. That's my next one.
I think there's a fine argument for that. I have no issues with Cars 3, really. I just don't care at all about the Cars things at all. Even though I think Cars 1 and Cars 3 are both pretty good movies. I think even though Brave, Finding Dory, and Monsters University are all like either flawed or just kind of like mediocre movies. I think just like the worlds that they inhabit are to me inherently more interesting than the Cars world, and like offer characters that I like more, like way more than the Cars ones do, even though if they don't really all gel together at all, you know?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense for me. I mean, that's just that multi-factor thing, right? Like when I was making those sort of, I feel more favorably about like the Cars universe and the Cars characters. I don't think that's a secret. And so for me, it boiled down to like objective pieces of art. Yeah. And I think it's a more cohesive movie.
That's fair. I would not disagree with that. Brave is a mess. So yeah, sure.
So that's, I think I surprised myself because I think it kept bumping up like one movie at a time. It was kind of doing individual battles and tournament style, you know? And it ended up higher than I think even I would have predicted, but
yeah, sure.
I don't have Cars next, though. There is a movie that falls between Cars and Cars 3, and I'm wondering if you can guess which one it is.
Is it A Bug's Life?
No.
Is it Lightyear?
No.
I'm gonna be shocked. Is it is it Toy Story 4?
No.
Okay, then I don't
every
know.
Movie that you've said, I think, is, well, I clearly higher than you thought it would be, but a couple of them much higher than I think you would expect.
Okay.
It's Incredibles 2. It's not quite in the same category as Finding Dory and Monsters University, but it falls sort of similarly in there, where I think it's a good movie. I like it. I like the characters.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm looking at it specifically from those three things I was trying to consider, this is one was the opposite of Cars 3. It kept bumping down like one movie at a time.
Oh, it's been bumping down for me too, and I'm still not sure if I like where it is. I honestly just keep forgetting everything that happened in that movie, to be honest.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder if I should bump it down lower. But I feel like I liked it when I watched it. And I know that I remember it looking really good, and I can picture like certain visuals, but I don't remember what the plot of that movie. Oh wait, it was with the mind control stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm comfortable. I'm kind of comfortable where it is, I guess. But yeah. It is. That's a weird one. That is a weird one.
I think it has a lot more going on in it than it needs to have going on.
Sure.
But it was just on the edge of like, do I consider this in the category of generally overall underwhelming, again, in the context of Pixar stuff? Do I bump it up higher? And it really, the only distinction for me is whether it bumps up in a tier or not. Cause I don't think it's necessarily winning fights against the next few things I've got on the list.
Yeah. Incredibles 2 is definitely the one thing that I'm not really sure if I'm comfortable with the place that it's in or not, but if it goes anywhere, it would just go lower than where it's at, basically. So
that sort of idea, that sort of, I can't quite figure out where the exact placement should be for me. And this is not the next thing on my list. I'm just generally responding to that idea. The Toy Story sequels all kind of constantly feel like they're moving around for me.
Sure. That's like, funny, yeah.
And part of it is because it's like, I don't know, like a sixth of the movies they've made or something like that. But they just are constantly, they feel like they're constantly in flux for me. And I don't know if I'm ever going to be comfortable where I put them anytime I rank them. And that's excluding Toy Story. I know exactly where I put that. You know?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That's funny. For me, Toy Story actually were probably the easiest of movies with sequels, the easiest to know where I sort of place them roughly, at least the order I place them, because I feel like my order is weird. I don't know if anybody else has the order that I have for these movies actually. So,
Yeah. Do we just keep going up, or how do you want to move from here?
Oh God, this is hard, isn't it? No, I think the mid tier we can go in order that we have it, I guess. I feel like that might be easier because that's what I have. I feel like top 10 and then top whatever is left in the mid tier, which is what, 11 through 19? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. Let's just do it in order from top to bottom for these.
Okay.
Because I'll just...
And we'll a review for everybody.
Yeah.
We'll recap.
Yeah. Yeah. Because part of this is just the conversation. So I'll give you my mid tier.
Okay.
Starting from 11. This is my number 11. Toy Story 3.
Okay.
Number 12, The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
13, Onward.
Okay.
Which ended up higher than I expected. 14, Up. 15, Toy Story 2. 16, Incredibles 2, which I'm not sure about. 17, Lightyear. 18, Monsters, Inc. 19, Bugs Life.
Okay. We have wildly different lists. Well, kind of. I think our middle, like you were sort of talking about at the start of this, like the middle tier is
these
sort
can
of
all be shuffled
because there's so much shuffling. I think we have... I think the middle tier, I think this illustrates that because I have some of the same stuff in there, but in very different places. But there are some surprises. I mean, I have stuff in my middle tier that's in your top tier, in your top 10. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprising myself with that. But
were there any in mine immediately that surprised you in that mid tier that from what I just read off?
It's not a surprise. I think other folks might be surprised where you put Monsters, Inc., but I also have slowly had Monsters, Inc. falling in my rankings.
Yeah.
Not because I feel differently about it than I used to. I actually do think this podcast makes me like it more than I used to,
mm-hmm.
but I think viewing it in the context of all the other Pixar stuff, it ends up falling because I'm looking at it through more lenses, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of other Pixar movies are just better than Monsters, Inc. There's a soft spot for it, you know, and it's a nice early feature, and it establishes a lot of stuff. But I feel like most things that are good in Monsters, Inc., like, are improved upon in other movies, you know? And, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's still a cute movie. I have nothing against Monsters, Inc.,
yeah.
but I don't really have the same nostalgia for it that a lot of other people do either. I think it's a big part mm-hmm. of it. It's always a battle between if I want to put a Bug's Life over Monsters, Inc. or not. And I think I've kind of settled on like Bug's Life is an interesting movie to think about and has interesting stuff in it. But Monsters, Inc. I like better just generally and more willing to watch it again. But I also don't know that I ever will because so many other Pixar movies I just like way better. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's oh, my gosh. This is a category that gets so weird just because.
Yeah.
Like it really got tough for me because this is where there's sort of a mixture of movies that I feel like have an important mm-hmm. thing for me to pull away from them and some that don't, you know? So this is really mm-hmm. where it was like I had to pit apples versus oranges, where it was like, okay, mm-hmm. I think this is objectively a much better movie, which I want to acknowledge, but this is one where I feel like it's currently resonating with me really, really strongly. That's so hard to pit against each other.
Yeah.
So I currently, and this is what's so wild, and this is why I never know how to feel about the Toy Story movies. I currently have Toy Story 4 very high, I think. Higher than the other two sequels.
I thought I was going to be the odd one out by that, but...
No.
Toy Story 4 made my top 10, so...
Yeah, so Toy Story 4 is my number 10 right now, because
my number 10 as well.
Yeah, so Toy Story 4 is my number 10, and so then going down from there, I have Toy Story 4, Wall-E, Nobody Hurt Me.
That is surprising, but...
I know. Finding Nemo, Luca... I heard some sort of gasp Lord. There, I think.
All these past three movies have just,
I know.
I'm genuinely, you were underselling, like, yeah, our lists are a little different. Like, this is genuinely shocking me.
I know. But here's, I spent a lot, like, when I do my top nine, I hope people will understand why they're there. Mm-hmm. But Luca and then The Incredibles, Toy Story 2 and 3, Monsters, Inc., Lightyear, and then Cars.
Okay.
Yeah. And then from there, I get into Incredibles 2, the sequels, Brave, Good Dinosaur, all that stuff.
Yeah. The bottom, you know, the sort of bottom part of that makes perfect sense. I feel like those are very similar.
I really should have not made the tiers as equal as I tried to make them. But that doesn't change the fact that I have Luca lower than I would have expected, that I have Wall-E lower than I would have expected, and Finding Nemo lower than I would have expected.
Yeah. Huh. Wow.
I think we can revisit why some of those maybe end up there for me, because I don't know that the context will make as much sense from what I was doing without getting into the top 10 stuff. So
can we just do that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Cool.
So my my top nine, I guess. You already know my 10th because I had Toy Story 4 there. Mm-hmm. I should, oh God, do we go reverse? Do we go from the top? What do we do?
No, let's start from the top. Just, okay. Just read them off. Just read them, sure, off all 10 when we talk about,
okay,
it.
Okay, I'll read them all off and then I'll talk about each one at some point. So this top nine, as a reminder, are the ones that I felt I can always enjoy, that instill some sort of core belief in me or remind me of how I want to be. And I think are all objectively very good pieces of art. So I put Coco at number one.
Sure.
Inside Out at number two, mm-hmm. Toy Story at number three, Turning Red, then Soul, Up, Ratatouille, Onward, and A Bug's Life.
Actually, Onward doesn't really surprise me. It surprised me how high I had it up, but I kind of am not, I'm not surprised that you have it in your top 10.
Yeah.
Bug's Life in your top or top nine is surprising to me.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
So A Bug's Life, it was surprisingly high, I remember, last time around. And I bumped it. It actually got bumped below movies that I had it higher than last time. Because last time I was like, this is my rewatch value, right? I love the movie A Bug's Life. It's one of my favorite Pixar movies. Just that gut reaction favorite thing. I just enjoy it.
Sure.
But also the more I thought about it and I was trying to think, okay, what do I actually get out of it? I really do think A Bug's Life is a movie that values thinking outside of systems and the power of people against oppressive systems.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that it's the type of movie that people sort of jokingly bring up when they talk about fascism, but it actually is about fascism.
Makes sense.
So I think, aside from just it being a movie I enjoy, I actually do think there's something that must have resonated with me to have it be that valuable to me. And I think as I grow up and grow older and as I see things differently, I think the more I value it, and I think it only kind of increases in its value to me over time. So thematically, that sort of core perspective or belief, the fact that it's a movie about challenging a system and empowering people to be a force against oppression, I think is what will have it up there for me for a long time.
That totally makes sense. No, yeah. I think you make a good case for it.
Yeah. I'll be a Bug's Life defender. I've always felt like, you know, it's, I think for a lot of people, it's in conversation for, I mean, prior to Good Dinosaur and Cars 2, it was frequently in discussion as the worst Pixar movie.
Sure.
And I've been fighting people forever on that. Like, to me, it just, there's no way.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I feel like it's since Pixar has gone on, that fervor against it has sort of calmed down. Like, I don't know if you find a lot of people who are like, hate it. It's more just sort of like, oh yeah, I forgot that that was a movie that Pixar made, if anything.
Which I think means nostalgia has taken over, you know, for a lot of people.
Too. I think so too. Yeah.
I do think A Bug's Life's biggest weakness, if you can call it that, is that it is one of the only, if not the only, Pixar movie that is straight up an adaptation of a fable. You know, like, is it just the ant versus the grasshopper or whatever?
Something like that, yeah.
So it is fundamentally, you know, built on another story, and Pixar doesn't really do that. But I don't hold that against other studios that do that necessarily. The only reason I would hold it against A Bug's Life is because Pixar typically doesn't. So
if
people docked it points for that, I would totally understand.
It's just like an early installment weirdness kind of thing. Just like they hadn't, you know, Pixar hadn't really found their thing yet, because there wasn't a thing, because it was literally the second movie that they made. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to do yours? Is there anything else that you wanted me to? I don't know if anything else was super surprising in my list outside of Bug's Life.
Not really. I mean, because the order, like, Coco is number one, I think makes perfect sense. I think that was the Bug's Life is the only one that was really surprising. I still am surprised that Toy Story 4 made your top 10.
Yeah, we'll have to revisit that.
Because, yeah, let's talk. I'll go through mine, and then we can sort of compare. So mine, number one, Turning Red.
Yeah.
Number two, Inside Out.
Yeah.
Number three, Toy Story.
Beautiful.
Number four, Coco. Number five, Finding Nemo. Number six, Ratatouille. Number seven, Wall-E. Number eight, Soul. Number nine, Luca. And number 10, Toy Story 4.
Okay. So I think I want to talk about Finding Nemo briefly, because I'm the one who dropped it really, really low. And I think where you have it makes a lot more sense for a lot more people.
Mm-hmm.
Finding Nemo, I think, is objectively one of the best movies that Pixar has made. Mm-hmm. I can't argue with that. I think it's an incredible movie. I think when I'm considering for me the sort of personal value of it to me and how I move through the world, it doesn't offer as much as the 11 movies I put in front of it. So I think that's purely the only reason it ended up where it ended up.
Yeah. 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 Oh, you mean you're not a parent with a fear of losing your child to yeah. Yeah.
But,
I think it makes sense.
But I really examined that for myself because I was like, this feels very low. And so I was like, okay, what did we talk about? What is the value that I find in that movie? And I do think the fact that it explores, yeah, of course it explores being a parent and the fear of that or whatever. But if you're not a parent, what is it offering? And I do think it offers a story of how you can allow your grief to arrest you and others around you if you do not address it and if you don't process it. And so I think there is something very deep in there that anybody can pull out, right? But I think Up also addresses grief in a way that I think I just vibe with more.
Mm, gotcha. No, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, you know, Finding Nemo, it was one of the few Pixar movies of that particular era that it comes from that I did watch at the time. And so I have nostalgia for it, but also, but also like it was one that I hadn't revisited in a long time until we did the podcast. And I think was just really floored by how much I loved it watching it years later and how beautiful it looked and just how good of a movie it is. And that alone was enough to really like endear it to me more than I think if I was making the ranking sans podcast, you know, well, I guess I couldn't have done that because I would have been missing like half the Pixar movies, but you know what I mean? Like I think watching it later in life with a more critical eye actually like really helped me appreciate it more, made me genuinely love it a lot more. And it stuck with me more than I thought and more than a lot of other movies. Whereas, you know, the converse honestly was true with Up, which is a movie that I liked watching it coming out. And then it's sort of like revisiting. It's sort of like, I like half the movie. that's really it. You know, And the real personal emotional stuff in it just wasn't enough to really redeem the stuff that I didn't really vibe with for me, you know? Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is you and I think have not exactly the same, but sort of similar reactions to two movies that I think a lot of people just sort of assume are at the top of the list, which are Up and WALL-E.
Yeah.
Your reaction to Up, I think I have frequently sort of felt with WALL-E, although I feel softer on it than I did before. I used to be pretty hard on it.
Sure.
Where I think the first portion of WALL-E is one of the greatest animated pieces of art ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel just less as excited about the second half. I feel better about the second half than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they both, as the two movies that are sort of the de facto best that this studio has to offer, it is interesting that both of us have particular sort of outside of maybe the norm feelings about any given portion of them.
Yeah, yeah. No, it makes sense too. WALL-E, that's another one where I felt like I maybe agreed with that sort of mindset before the podcast, but then revisiting it, I gained so much more appreciation. Yeah. And I think it made me really like kind of love it a lot more than I had before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I actually kind of actively like where I think the movie goes, whereas beforehand, I don't know that I necessarily did. And I think, you know, for some people, it's not enough to warm themselves up to it. And I understand it's such a weird shift in that movie that it just becomes what it becomes in the last half of it.
And I'm with you now. Like, I don't disagree with where it ends up at all. I think if it were what I used to think it should have been, I don't think it would have connected with many people. Like, it just would have been this weird sort of animated art piece as opposed to like a full story in film, you know?
Yeah.
And I might have still liked it because I like Fantasia. that's not a story. You know what I mean? There are little individual stories along the way sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's more a visual spectacle than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. For a long time Inside Out was my number one. And you know,
I was wondering if it still would be, but I also knew that that what you put at the top could have ended up there.
Yeah, I thought about it and I still, you know, for both of those movies, it's like, you know, it's like a neck and neck thing. Toy Story obviously was always very high up, but a lot of that is nostalgia because I have seen it a million times, you know, and I do think it's a good little movie, but it is mostly nostalgia. I'll absolutely credit it to that, even though I do think it's good. But with Turning Red Inside Out, it was kind of a neck and neck thing. And I think it really just came down to like, both of those movies, I remember where I was when I watched them and the emotional state I was in when I watched them and how they impacted me and how much they stuck with me, and that I've both seen them multiple times. But I think it really just came down to what I want to throw on at any given time, no matter what my mood is in. And that really, 100,000 times is Turning Red. Inside Out, I can watch it if I want a good cry. But I do kind of have to be in the right mindset to watch it, even though I really love it a lot. Turning Red, I think Good Days, Bad Days, I would absolutely love seeing that movie again. And I've listened to that, to the soundtrack from it and Four Town songs from it so much. Like, I'm cool with every single aspect of that movie. So it just kind of made sense for that to be in my number one. And I don't have any regrets about that.
Yeah. Nor do I think you should. I think my top five, or not five, because I have Soul at five, and it wasn't going to go any higher than that.
Yeah.
My top four were constantly sort of rearranging as I was thinking through this. And I think it really was, if I have a scale with three arms, like, it really was, you know, which one am I valuing more? And I was trying my best to value them sort of equally. If I waited just rewatch value, enjoyment value, Turning Red just like skyrockets, right? Maybe not past Coco, because that's a movie I could constantly watch, kind of with the same idea. It's always going to be fun for me. It's always going to be enjoyable. I can listen to that music all the time, you know? But it might have made its way past Toy Story and Inside Out for the reason you're talking about, which is like, it's just fun. Like, there's no mood where it wouldn't be good to watch, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Soul was definitely the weird one, because that was one I was talking, obviously, earlier in the podcast. Because that is a movie, when I first watched that movie, I think I even said on that episode, when I first watched it, my instant reaction was like, this might be one of my favorite Pixar movies. I might like this better than Inside Out. I really like this. And it is one that, like, the more that I've thought about and the more that I've read about it and the more that I've talked about it, like, the less that I like it, unfortunately. Yeah. Even though I do think it's still a really good movie and it really touched me. We talked at length about it on our episode about it, but it is a movie that is just, like, so bifurcated of, like, this movie that is, like, really, like, the way that it speaks about, like, the human experience and everything is so beautiful and so, like, just in touch with a particular part of, like, life experience. But then the other half of it is just, like, just so misses the mark on, like, the real world context and who these characters are and, like, how it handles its characters and everything. And it's also not a movie I think that I would have been revisit as much as I thought I would either. I think it's still a really interesting movie and a well done movie, but it definitely is one that's like, it actually could have been done much, much, much better than it actually was.
Yeah. It's hard. It's a hard one, but it also isn't at the same time, because, like, I am in a position where I can afford to be like, well, it's a good piece of art and it speaks to me for the message and whatnot, and, like, could easily just get away with being like, and all that other stuff is social stuff. Like, if you just look at it as a piece of art, like, outside of context, but, like, that's one thing we talked about. Like, it cannot be separated from its context.
Yeah.
Like, the movie cannot be separated from the history of animation. It cannot be separated from the history of how Black people are treated in the world and in media. Like, and so it's such a hard one, because I have it really, really high for what I think it can do to center me and to ground me because of the stuff it explores thematically.
Yeah.
But there's almost, it's like really the only movie that I feel on this list that I have like an actual sort of internal conflict over, where I'm putting it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause then it feels like it's a weird thing where it's like, I am and I guess I am, right? I don't think I could argue with somebody who would say this, and that's a thing I have to examine within myself, but like, I'm placing the value I get from it higher maybe than it in context, you know?
Yeah.
But then I don't even know where I would put it on that, because no other movie really screws up in the very specific way that it does. So then what does that mean? Does it go like, I'm not entirely sure what to do with it for that reason.
Yeah.
And when you look at movies like Turning Red or Coco that have a very specific cultural lens and do that cultural lens justice and their thematic explorations justice, it becomes clearer that Soul really missed a mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Luca was one I was pleasantly surprised because that was pretty high for both of us. And I wasn't sure when I was making the ranking where I was going to end up putting it. But then I was, as I was ranking all the stuff, you know, kind of the mid tier, I was just like, I have zero issues with Luca at all. And yeah. In fact, and like, it's just such a charming, sweet, nice little movie. Like, it's not much of a thinker compared to so many other, yep. other movies, but then that made it higher for me because it's sort of like, it's not asking me to think deeply about it. It's like, do I enjoy watching it and, or not? And like, I do, yeah. And it's nice. And right. I like it. Like the simplicity like ends up helping it, you know?
Yeah. And I think both of us talked about how refreshing and important it is for studios to be able to make art like that. Like not yeah. every single movie that Pixar makes needs to be a gut punch. And I would argue that Luca has some little yeah. gut taps. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
It is
sure.
not without emotional impact. I think, you know, when I was doing my middle tier, it was like, is there just one category where I would consider it weaker or less impactful? And it really is just the emotional gut punch or the core perspective. Does it offer me a core perspective? Is it the type of thing I need to watch to remind myself how to be the type of human I want to be? No. but it is objectively very, very good art. And I always enjoy watching it, you know. So yeah. Having it upper middle for me, I think both of us probably have it higher than a lot of people would, and I'm glad yeah, both of us did that.
I think so too. Yeah, I really love that movie.
Yeah.
Can you refresh me again? What was of the Toy Story movies? What was your order yeah. for Toy Story?
Oh, this is so weird. Okay, so Toy Story 1 was my number 3 overall. It was my number 1 last time we did this, but we hadn't talked about Coco and Inside yeah. Out yet. Same. It's my number 1 Toy Story movie because I don't think that I think about media, animation, the sort of creative process around characters and you know, growth arcs mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. I wouldn't have this podcast where I'm deep diving even further into these movies without Toy Story. I can't make a movie that has, or I can't make a list that has the criteria instilled a core belief or perspective without putting Toy Story very, very high.
Yeah,
you know,
makes sense.
Then what's surprising to me is I do have Toy Story 4 as my next Toy Story movie, and then 2 and 3 are back-to-back underneath Toy Story 4. Here's the thing with Toy Story 4, and this is some recency bias. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I do think Toy Story 4, this movie that I still argue might not have been necessary, but now that we have it, I value it deeply, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that we could have never missed Toy Story 4 without obviously having gotten it. But what it does actually, I think, speaks to Pixar's sort of standard answer, we don't do a sequel unless we feel like we've got something to say. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Toy Story 4 speaks to that more than most other Pixar yeah. sequels, if not all of them, because I feel like it says something really deeply, and it says yeah. it very deeply about the main character of Pixar, who I don't think I thought we needed to say more about, but clearly did.
Yeah.
I think for that reason, it ended up being bumped higher. I think Toy Story 4 has a lot to do with closing Woody's story in a way I didn't realize
yeah,
needed
yeah.
closing. And I think the fact that that story closes with a character who has spent, I mean, what, 15 years or something mm-hmm. with this deeply held belief that he has to take care of other toys, other kids, other this, other that, to have the value that he thinks he has, and that he can't simply like be outside that specific context, or he has to do it a very specific way. I think that's really interesting because it's a different closing to something like that than I would have expected. Yeah. It's almost like taking a character who has a really narrow focus, and that narrow focus makes him a good character, like a really compelling character, and says, actually, what you needed was to widen your focus, and that's going to make you an even better character.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so. I love that so much. It's just, it was so surprising to me because when yep. I was saying at the top of the episode, like, some of these might be surprising, it was because I had Toy Story 4 higher than the other sequels. So I was genuinely shocked that you did too. Because I remember our Toy Story 4 episode. I felt like I was fighting with you and Tommy a little bit of like defending it against a lot of y'all's criticism, and y'all were like shocked when I said I thought it was better than 3.
No, I'm
and
with so you now.
I feel very I feel very, very validated now, let me tell you.
Well, here's the thing. When I was trying to for anything that could have ended up in my first two tiers, I needed to have some sort of reason that it might compete for one of those high spots. And the big thing for me was, how do these movies inform my perspective? Like, I really can't stress enough how valuable that was to me in this process. And I think for me, what I can pull out of Toy Story 4 is more valuable. Like, through Woody's journey, like his overall journey that concludes with Toy Story 4 is more valuable than what Woody is going through in Toy Story 2 or Toy Story 3. I think those two movies inform what happens in Toy Story 4. And I think for that reason, like, make it a better movie than I think we realized it could or should have ever been, you know?
Yeah.
Because Toy Story 3, like, Woody's ultimately right. Like, he gets what he wants, or he gets the thing that he thinks he needs, or whatever the case is, right? Like, everybody's sort of presented as, like, in opposition to him, and they are the ones who are sort of wrong. And Woody goes through so many different, you know, different journeys over the course of four movies or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think ultimately what you're going to pull away, like, quote, spiritually from Toy Story 3 is as valuable as what you could pull away from Toy Story 4.
Oh, for sure. Because 3 is so much more of a movie that's kind of more about the audience, and it's like about the ensemble, and it's like a little bit about Andy. Like, it's not a character focused story in the way that 4 is. And I think that's what makes it so strong. It's really the most character focused Toy Story movie after the first one, I would argue.
Oh, I agree.
You know,
I think Toy Story 3 was like cathartic for the audience, right?
Yeah,
I think, and what's weird, you know, speaking of context and not being able to take things out of context or trying to take them out of context, I think Toy Story 3 was largely the movie that we probably needed as an audience for that series at
Absolutely.
The time we got it.
Because
the audience that were children when Toy Story started were going to or finishing college when Toy Story 3 happened. And so a lot of what that movie represented at the time was that very particular closure and moving on. I don't think that's focused on one specific character. Yeah, I agree with you on that for sure.
Yeah. That's so fun. I love that we ended up on the same wavelength for that. I'm genuinely shocked.
Yeah.
But honestly,
who knows? Ask me in a year. Like,
yeah.
I was genuinely surprised that it ended up higher and as higher as it is than the other two.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, as of this, using the criteria I used, that's where it sits, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, the weird one for me, I think, is that Toy Story 2 is so low, and it's not that I have anything against that movie. It's just because I do think that that's a good one. I would argue it's objectively better than 3 is, but I have 3 higher just because 2, for whatever reason, just never hit with me, like, as a movie. I watched it as a kid. I've watched it again as an adult, and it was just like, this is a good movie. I'm never going to think about it after I'm done with it. It's weird.
And what's weird, I mean, I think about that movie a lot because there's sort of a weird role reversal thematically and all
that
sort of, like, there's plenty to dissect in there.
Yeah,
and I think what's weird about it being so much lower than just Toy Story for me, and I think, you know, plenty of the reasons make sense. I don't think there's that much justification that needs to happen, is when you get into conversations about sequels in general and people are talking about, like, name a movie that got a sequel as good as the original. Toy Story 2 comes up all the time.
It totally does. Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean?
I don't disagree with that. It is an incredibly good movie. Yeah.
And I think I don't even think I could really, you know, I wouldn't feel confident I could demolish somebody making the argument that Toy Story 2 is better than Toy Story 1. Like, I think depending on how you're measuring things, you might be able to make that argument. But it's just I think it's a really good movie. I mean, it against all odds, really, it's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, I think it kind of just falls at, like, it is a good movie. Like, I don't know that it is, it's not really pushing anything. It's not really, it's doing some reversal stuff. It's got cool stuff to explore, but most Pixar movies do.
Yeah.
The lasting value, I think, for a lot of people sort of falls when you consider 3 and 4.
Sure.
And maybe people would argue against the 4 part of that, but
I think if the series had done more with Jesse after the second one, the conversation would be different. But
point.
I do think part of the problem is that 2 establishes Jesse, and I think the best part of that movie is her story and her arc, and then it kind of just doesn't do anything with her after the second one. Just kind of throws her out with Buzz, and, like, I think that ends up weirdly retroactively kind of hurting 2 because she ends up feeling like a superfluous character in the ensemble when she absolutely shouldn't be and wasn't set up like that. So
yeah, if I'm going to make the argument that what happens in Toy Story 2 and 3 makes Toy Story 4 a better movie, then Jesse needed to be a bigger piece of 3 and 4 for Toy Story 2 to be as valued.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem with the series as a whole, I think. Yeah. Like, not one any particular movie. Like, if she, you know, if she was phased out in one movie, she should have had more of a bigger role in the next one or vice versa. But as it stood, they just never did enough with her and never seemed to have a clear idea what to do with her after they established her. And that was just kind of a problem with, you know, the whole cohesive nature of yeah. it, you know?
Yeah. Remind me where you had Onward, because you commented that you weren't surprised I had it where I had it, but I don't remember where you put it.
It's my number 13, so okay. It was still kind of mid-tier,
yeah,
but
like,
high, yeah, I mean, it was above Up, so I think most people would be shocked by that.
It was above Wall-E.
It was above Up and Toy Story 2, so yeah. Like, you know, most people would disagree with that, but I mean, I cried at that movie, and I think that, for me, honestly, really, Onward, I think, is a fun movie that I enjoy, but really what cranks it so much higher than any other movie for me is the climax of it, where you have where Ian, the protagonist of the story, doesn't get to be at the center of the reunion with his dad and just sort of has to watch it, you know, from afar. And I think that is such a brilliant kind of postmodern move.
Well,
that is so emotionally, like, so it hits so emotionally, it's such a gut punch, but is also like so smart and kind of daring for a movie like that. Like, that alone, I will never forget that.
I think it's what makes Onward art. Like, I know that sounds like a really bizarre thing to say, but like, I think Onward is the movie I have in the top tier that I would give the most notes to if I were trying to be objective.
Because
I think there were elements of Onward that I remember saying, like, there's a little bit of emptiness going on here. I feel like we could fill this out more.
Sure.
Like, I had, you know, stronger critiques for Onward than I did any other movie, I think, outside of Soul, obviously, that I have in this top 10. But I think, that particular, I hate to call it a twist because I feel like that trivializes it, but that twist at the end of how they handle that, I really think does something no other Pixar movie really dares to do, which is like really take its protagonist outside of the climactic moment. Like, it's really wild. Yeah. And I think the themes in that movie are really, really valuable. I mean, I think what Ian is going through and what he takes away from that movie is incredibly deep the more you think about it and the more you examine it. And I just, I don't think I've ever watched that movie without like really losing my composure when he realizes that like Barley was the person he needed and had the entire time. Like, it just, I don't know. It's really, really artful, really good. I like that. I also love that we value that movie so much more than so many other people.
Most other people. Yeah.
Yeah. There are certainly movies I will fight for, and they're not all like, it's not even just the ones I think are great. Like, it's so funny, the movies that I would like fight people on, like Onward is one that I would fight people and say, and it's one of my favorites. Yeah. Also, I fight people on Cars 2, and for what? It's like my second least favorite movie they've made.
Yeah. I mean, I have that with certain things too. Yeah. It's just like, why am I fighting so hard with this thing I don't really actually care about? It's just like, it's almost like the instinct to like fight an injustice because you can
tell. I think that's it.
It's like, you can tell, like, no, you are being too hard on this thing. It's not that bad. It's not because you yourself personally are passionate about it. It's because you're passionate about the idea of people being wrong and mistreating something.
Yeah, if you're shitting on it for the memes of it all, or if you're shitting on it because you know you're supposed to, I'll fight you.
Yeah,
you know?
that
I'm
going to
shit on
me.
It because I've watched it like 14 times and know what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the more pretentious things I would take, but
I've had those fucking conversations recently with like Avatar stuff. I don't really even care about the first Avatar that much, but I have such a violently averse reaction to the whole, like, I don't care about Avatar and I need everyone to know. And it's just sort of like, then why are you talking about it so much?
I don't care about Avatar.
I just
because don't actually care.
I saw it in theaters in 2009 and I was like, that's a pretty movie, and then never thought about it ever again. So why the hell are you, why is it living rent free in your head? I'll probably see the second one because it looks cool. I don't know. Like, but it's weird that I have to, that it'll have to be a statement. If I actually end up liking the second one, then it's like a statement that I went and saw Avatar 2 and liked picked it against all odds because the culture hates Avatar. It's like, or you guys could just like not talk or see movies that you don't care about.
Yeah.
There's so much other stuff out there. Like, why is that a hill you'll die on?
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel that I understand the instinct to like,
I'm glad. Fight,
violently fight against injustices against things that you don't actually really care about at all.
Right, especially because it's like people, because it's like there. It's funny that these two specific examples are also the brainchild of people that like we don't need to defend. One, yeah. In my case, far worse right. of a person than in your case, but like there are people who do not need our defending.
Yeah, no, I mean it's still gonna make $1 billion. Also, funny, Onward, and Avatar both have blue people in it. Hilariously,
they do.
And Cars 2 has blue cars, so
yeah,
there's
exactly
just something
the same.
About it. Yeah. So we gotta also, was one of us really passionate about the Smurfs
and,
movies or anything? I mean, maybe
and
throw that in there.
The
too.
The second Cars movie has cars underwater.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, they're underwater and Onward at certain points too. Oh my god.
Oh man. Wow.
Yeah.
Should wow, we, I guess, is, before we just reread our list, because I know that there's someone out there who's like, what the hell was the list? You know?
Yeah.
All over the place. Is there any other movie that you want to just touch on while we're in the sort of like big picture zone, you know?
I don't think so. Oh, I guess like to the end of the day, to the end of the day, I don't even know why that was my transition. what am I trying to say? Ratatouille, I think, is always going to be a surprising one, I think, because it's one that people who like it really love it. And that was another one we brought up in the first year where like I was surprised by how much I liked that movie and how much that movie persists as one that I really love a lot. So it's my number six, which, you know, isn't like the highest of the high, but it's also, I think, higher than a lot of people who maybe didn't think about it. Or haven't seen it in a long time would put. Like I think that's pretty, that might be surprising to some people, but I think it's a pretty perfect movie.
Yeah, it's a really great movie, and I don't know why it exists in the spot that it does of like forgettable to people.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Like, I can't think of a reason why it's forgettable, but I can acknowledge that the masses are communicating to me a truth, which is that for some reason it is forgettable. But I think when you do watch it, it's like, oh shit, that's right. This is a really good movie. I forgot that this was like that good, you know?
Yeah.
I had it as my second favorite when we did our rankings the first time around. Mm-hmm. And the only movie that existed then that we were talking about that I ended up swapping was I bumped up much higher than I did last time. Ratatouille is still, of the movies we talked about, that first half is still my third favorite of the first half of movies they made, you know?
Yeah, I guess it is.
I still think it's probably a better movie than Up. Well, I don't know. That's hard. I'm not going to get
better
into that.
Movie
I know
than
you
Up.
Do. I know you think that, but I'm obviously
a
struggling.
Better movie than Up. I think Ratatouille just is weird in a very particular way. It's weird in like, I mean, it's weird in the like, wait, they're just, the rats are pulling on the people's hair and now he's a marionette. Like, there is just something so bizarre about that idea. That it's like weird in a way that like, it's like weird, but also not cartoonishly weird enough to stick in people's memories. So like, it's a thing where like, I see certain people not vibing with it and other people who really like weird stuff also not vibing with it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I kind of get it. It's like a really, it's a strangely low key movie for how weird it is.
Yeah.
I think
it's a weird thing that's like treated very sincerely.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think if you're just talking if you're just talking like the most sort of standard measure of like a good, perfect movie that like doesn't have like has solid characters, has arcs, has like it opens things and closes them. And like it tells a story in the way that you are expecting stories to be told. Like, yeah, I think Ratatouille is like kind of perfect. Like it really touches on everything that is a conventional measure of what a good movie is, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's all I can think of otherwise that we haven't touched on. A lot of other stuff is not surprising. I think like where Lightyear falls for both of us makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones that I think has a really good strong message. It's a thing that I can pull a lot from, but I just think it's not a great rewatch, and it's objectively got problems.
Shouldn't have been a Toy Story movie, in my opinion.
I feel you. I feel you. I don't know if I'm like as strongly with you on that, but you know, we go back an episode. Y'all can listen to our convo.
I think it would have solved a lot of problems.
So shall we review our lists here?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'll go. I think you started us, so I'll let you finish us. I'll do mine, and then you can cool. do yours here. So from the top, I'll do it. My number one is Coco, and then going down, Inside Out, Toy Story, Turning Red, Soul, Up, Ratatouille, Onward, A Bug's Life, Toy Story 4, Wall-E, Finding Nemo, Luca, The Incredibles, Toy Stories 2 and 3, Monsters, Inc., Lightyear, Cars 1, Incredibles 2, Cars 3, Brave, Finding Dory, Monsters University, Cars 2, and my least favorite Pixar movie is The Good Dinosaur.
Shocker. All right, my list, number one, Turning Red, and then going down, Inside Out, Toy Story, Coco, Finding Nemo, Ratatouille, Wall-E, Soul, Luca, Toy Story 4, Toy Story 3, The Incredibles, Onward, Up, Toy Story 2, Incredibles 2, Lightyear, Monsters, Inc., A Bug's Life, Brave, Finding Dory, Monsters University, Cars, Cars 3, Cars 2, Good Dinosaur.
Whew.
Yeah.
Might be the longest list of things I've ever ranked.
I know, jeez.
I once set out to rank all my favorite Power Rangers as I did my rewatch, and I gave up. I was this is too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the hundreds.
I just
right?
don't like it. I just don't like doing it. So you're welcome, everybody. You got a 26 item ranking out of me.
Yeah.
That I will instantly regret the moment we're done.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I will say though. I mean, you know, this is like the length of a podcast episode. Mm-hmm. But it actually, I thought we would take longer to talk through these than it did. And I think maybe part of it is just because we actually were on the same wavelength with stuff more than I expected us to be.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun.
Well, I think anything that we felt very similarly about, we don't need to rehash. Anything we felt very differently about, we talked about, and anything that was not that compelling to discuss, we didn't discuss, you know?
Yeah. Y'all have almost 30 episodes of podcasts about all this stuff to listen. Well,
if you're shocked we didn't talk about Monsters, Inc., we did a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
And then we revisited those thoughts on Monsters University. So,
yeah. I will ask you, though, I guess, for some stuff that hasn't been rehashed.
Sure.
I mean, like, do you have, I don't, so if you also don't, then we can just be like, well, we're done. Do you have any, like, sort of closing thoughts now that we've, like, done this entire, you know, done the entire Pixar filmography, like, things that have changed since we started doing it, things that maybe you expected to happen over the course of the podcast that did or didn't, like, I don't know, like, do you feel different now that we've done, that we watched every Pixar movie and talked about them at length over the course of a couple of years?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think that I have, this is weird because of how we sort of pitched the idea of the podcast. Like, I think I have a even stronger appreciation for a lot of these movies I already liked. I certainly have more knowledge about how they're made, even though I thought I had a pretty solid grasp on that. And I think a lot of these movies, because of the way you and I have been talking about them, I think are pieces of media that I value probably a lot more than I even realized I did. Like, I think there is a sort of cynical piece of me that would laugh at myself for saying this. And I think it's wrong that I would, but I'm going to just do it. I think a lot of these pieces of media are, like, genuinely, like, important to who I am. And I feel like that's not a sentiment that I usually communicate. Like I said at the top of this, like, I've been thinking about that idea. And it's, I think, more percentage wise, for sure, more pieces of media that Pixar has produced, I think, are important to who I am as a human being and how I want to navigate the world than probably any other creative group, force, individual, out there, like any other kind of media. I think, I'm surprised, I think, at how much more I was able to get out of these movies because I already felt like I got a lot out of them. I also think, you know, if part of the question that anybody would ask is, Doug, do you still believe Pixar hasn't made a bad movie? I don't think my position has changed on that. I do think Good Dinosaur is a much worse movie than I thought it was before we started.
Oh, no. I mean, that's so funny. That is so funny.
So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. So I think those are probably the two big things. Yeah, I know the first one isn't really that interesting because the second one I think is the one like, can he be like, will he be proven wrong?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It is a weird thing that we'll be finished with this. But there's a part of me that's like excited to watch some of these movies outside the context of the marathon, you know?
Sure.
And to be able to watch them and sort of have everything you and I talked about and be on the other side of the conversation now, I think is going to be really cool, if that makes any sort of sense.
Absolutely. No, I think that makes perfect sense.
I mean, what about you though? I mean, you came into the podcast not having seen all of them and setting out to learn more about Pixar as a storytelling force and a studio. Where are you at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I was when we first started, it was exciting to be able to be the person without knowledge about a thing on a podcast, because I feel like usually whether I'm a guest on something or I'm co-hosting something, like I'm usually coming in with the research and the notes and stuff. So like, for one, it was like, I had to do way less work for this podcast.
Ooh, no pressure, Doug.
But also, yeah, you did great. And that was very nice. But also, I mean, it was just kind of cool just to learn about stuff and just to like be able to listen and react to things and gain more appreciation. Like, it was really cool to have the experience of watching a movie in a lot of cases, like probably about half of these movies, I think, ultimately going into it to watching it, knowing very little to nothing about it, watching it, having a reaction, and then learning about the context afterwards that would sometimes either reaffirm what I was thinking or change what I was thinking after learning about it and talking about it. And that alone, I mean, that's like so basic for podcasting, but it is always cool to be in that chair, right? Like, it's cool to have that experience. I think bigger than that, like, I've never looked at the arc of a studio before. Like, I certainly haven't either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've looked at the arc of like long running franchises or like movies by a specific director or something by a specific artist or writer or whatever, right? By like one person or one team. And I feel like with Pixar, because it's a studio, it is a collection of people. And you sort of think of it in like corporate terms if you're not really thinking about it. Like, you think about the way that you think about just Disney as a brand or whatever. Yeah. You know, and with Pixar, I think for one, it helped me appreciate like, oh, even though this is a studio, you can think of it from the corporate mindset, but there are also like this collection of artists working there that sort of filter in and out, and some of it changes. Some of them are there throughout all of it. But just to sort of see how this collection of people with similar ideals sort of work through changing technology and changing at a changing industry and evolve their storytelling techniques and the types of stories they tell and the types of people they bring in to help tell them or not in some cases, like seeing that evolution was really fascinating, because it does, I think, in a lot of ways, even though this is only one example, I think helps better understand just the industry in general, like the way that these things are made and the way these people work together and the conclusions they make and the products that they make. It kind of helps me understand when I see other movies coming out from other studios, I can sort of correlate those terms of sort of like, oh, I wonder what was happening, you know, how they were responding to previous movies that they made, or what were the, you know, what are DreamWorks's eras, you know, corresponding to how Pixar has its eras, right? Yeah. Or is that even a remotely equivalent conversation? You know, who knows? Like, but I do think thinking about that, it makes me think about that stuff a little more than I ever used to, and just generally pay attention to movie studios and animation studios in a way that I never did before. And I think that that's really cool, and that's the thing that I'm kind of excited about. Like, I don't know, something like Laika, the stop motion studio, right? Like, and they've only done like four feature films, but I think that's a thing where I kind of want to pay more attention to them as a studio doing a very particular, maybe not, I don't know if you call it niche, but kind of niche, because there's not a lot of stop motion out there, like very particularly focused on doing stop motion movies. And it makes me more interested in paying attention to what they do and maybe follow along on their journey as a studio, you know, and see how those types of things evolve and how technology evolves and all that kind of stuff. I've always been someone that's been interested in film production and Hollywood as an industry in certain degrees. And this just gave me another angle to think about it and understand it, being someone who doesn't literally work in the industry, you know? That was really helpful and really cool. And yeah, I mean, just a general appreciation for these movies and what they do. And I think, you know, be able to sort of push back on some people who have misconceptions about it or get them confused with Disney movies or whatever. Yeah. And just, you know, just the idea of like, you know, anyone who's sort of annoyed with the franchise of it all, just being like, no, I actually have actual evidence and basically proof as to why you're wrong. And they aren't just cash grab movies.
Yeah.
They are actually looking to do something different, whether it's good or not. You know, that your mileage may vary, but at least like it's not, they aren't just looking just to make the next buck. That's not why a Toy Story 4 comes out. And, you know, I think that we've sort of proven that through our research and conversations and stuff.
That does make me happy. 'Cause like when it comes to the realm of entertainment on film, whether that's television, movies, whatever, there is very little that I tend to be able to offer perspective to you on. It's basically like CG animation and like reality television production. Like those are like the two things I wouldn't even say I know more about, but think about more than I think you typically do. So it's nice to have been able to help be a vehicle for that discussion or for that sort of perspective.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? This is a thing that I figured out way earlier, so it has not even really been on top of mind like in the last year, but just like appreciation for just CG movies in general. 'Cause I do, you know, I am such a big fan of, you know, traditionally animated, I guess, if you want to call it like 2D animation and like practical effects and stuff. And I feel like there's always that conversation of just like, everything else is just inherently better than CG. CGI just ruined everything. And I think that like, learning about the artistry behind it and seeing how the technology evolved in these movies and the kind of really stunning, amazing things and the great art that they're able to create with the technology that they have. And that it's not just like being made on a computer in the way that they do doesn't with assets or whatever, doesn't make it any less of a work of art than someone drawing it by hand. It's just a tool. It's just a different method for creating something, and the innovations that they made and the stuff that they're only able to do with the technology that they have that other mediums and other forms of animation can't do. I think I learned a lot about that from doing this.
That's exciting. I love that. I don't think you ever did take for granted what value there is in CG animation, but I feel like a lot of people do. And so if our conversations offered that perspective to people, that makes me very happy.
Yeah, well, because there's a lot of CG animation that's bad. Like, and I think it sucks that like that it is kind of the prominent thing now, which means that there's going to be just a bigger glut of bad CG animation or stuff that like probably would have been better if it wasn't CG, but a CG anyway, because maybe it's just easier for a studio to pay some of the, you know, underpay the cheapest CG artists to do it, you know? And I think that makes it kind of have a bad rap because there is such a glut of bad cheap animated movies out there. But Pixar doesn't do that. They are the best of the best. Like that's not overhyping it. Like that's just fact.
I really don't think there's an argument, and I think anybody who would make the argument is a fool. Oh man, it's weird. It's like weird to end this episode because we know we're going to be back, but if you have been following along with this podcast, I mean, we don't have episodes planned anymore until probably June 2023, assuming Elemental does not face any, you know, production pushes or anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't have plans for the next 5 months. So,
yeah. I mean, there's things that we could do and people have asked us about, you know, but we don't, like, people have asked us, like, are you going to do the shorts? Like, are there TV shows now? but we haven't committed to anything. It's very much what we feel like doing, I think.
Yeah, the two of us, they're like, it's not even a matter of like necessarily maybe this or maybe that. Like, we haven't put any plans to paper. So if it's entirely possible you won't hear from us for 5 months, it's also possible that someone would reach out to us and be like, hey, I want to talk about this. I have this perspective. Or you and I end up seeing something and being like, you know what? Let's just do that. I don't know when that Pixar cartoon is supposed to come out, that the baseball series is supposed to come out. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe that comes out in this amount of time. Don't remember when that's supposed to happen. Or we just feel inspired. So, you know, who knows? I will say, you know, if there is, we said the same thing on our 1 year retrospective. If there is somebody out there who listens to our show, has a very specific, unique perspective about any Pixar movie at this point, even if we've covered them already, don't hesitate to reach out. Just because we talked about a movie one particular way doesn't mean we're not open to hearing from somebody, you know, again, about something very different that we didn't touch on. So don't be afraid to reach out. It's not a guarantee that we'll necessarily do an episode on it, but you just never know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Maybe we'll do an episode on Ratatouille, the TikTok musical. I never actually saw that.
I haven't watched it yet either. It's still out there.
Ideas are out there. If any of these are like really striking a chord with y'all, let us know, because then at least we'll know what people would be interested in listening to.
I think it is safe to say, though, that like our journey is with Pixar. And so even though we've had questions about would we move to another studio or do other animated movies,
it would be a different
podcast.
I think
it's safe to say that would be a different podcast.
Yeah, for sure. This isn't ever going to become a general animation podcast or anything like that. Yeah.
Nope. I don't think that's the one necessarily for us to do either.
No.
So, all right.
Ready to cover all the DreamWorks movies?
Well,
Doug?
we've gotten that question.
Yeah, we totally
and I've seen and I've seen most of them, but I, at that point, I would
and I haven't, know. So it would be the same kind of concept. I don't know that I want to do that.
Yeah, I think that there was something about Pixar that was inherently.
Yeah.
Sort of interest. Like, we knew there was a story there.
Yeah.
And I don't think that same story exists at DreamWorks, which doesn't mean it's not a valuable, or any other studio, which doesn't mean it's not a valuable one.
Like, it would be a wildly different
podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if
it wouldn't be a continuation of this one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, if you want to find us in the meantime, if you are sad that you won't hear from us for 5 months, you are in luck. You can hear the two of us talking all the time, together and separately. Derek, where can people find you and stuff you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Derek B. Gale. You can also find my podcast, Gimmicks, which looks at the high concept, experimental, structure breaking, gimmicky episodes of television. It's a different show and a different guest for every episode. That one is also on break, so you won't hear me on that podcast unless you want to listen to the backlog. But it'll be back in 2023, which is rapidly approaching month TBA. So, you know, follow Gimmicks Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or follow my personal Twitter, and you know, I'll let you know when new episodes drop in, and subscribe to it anywhere you get your podcasts. What about you, Doug?
Yeah, you can find me on another podcast called Victory Road. It's a Pokemon podcast. We've been talking about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, if you're listening to this in the real time. And you can find me on a podcast called Novel Gaming, where my friend Katie and I talk about all the books, video games, movies, TV, just media in general we've been consuming lately. If you want to listen to specifically me and Derek talking about stuff, you can hear us every single week on a podcast called Walloping Web Snappers. It is a Spider-Man cartoon deep dive. So if you enjoy the realm of animation, we are talking about animation every week in the realm of Spider-Man. And we've been doing that for like 170 episodes. Mm-hmm. So that is plenty of stuff to keep you full of the two of us until the next Falling with Style episode if you're into Spider-Man. Of course, you can rate and review all of those podcasts. You can still rate and review this podcast. Just because we're doing it less frequently doesn't mean people won't love to find it if they're looking for Pixar stuff. So rate and review wherever you are listening. Someone else hasn't found us and would like to. You can visit us on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com, which is the home of Falling with Style. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod. Or if you have an email that's specifically about Pixar or Pixar stuff or animation or whatever, if it falls in this realm, you can email us at pixarpodcast@gmail.com. Next time you hear from us, it will probably be about Elemental, which we don't know that much about, but I'm excited to get to.
Me too. See you then.
See you next summer.